Hello and welcome to the very first live stream from the Cinephiles. My name's Steve Morris.
Hello, everyone. My name is John Rocha. I'm a writer, producer, and host here in town. And of course, if you're joining us, this is one of our fun things to do here on the Cinephiles.
Well, it's a particularly fun thing now that we can't actually go out of our houses.
Yeah,
you know, we have to go somewhere. And we got a bunch of requests from our Patreons to talk about what's going on in the world right now, which is, of course, the coronavirus.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're catching up and watching this later, though, we recorded this as kind of a conversation that we felt our fans wanted to have because they were requesting this. And the coronavirus is certainly consuming so many things. It's affecting everything from like sports and politics and everything large like that, all the way down to the schmodown. We've had to postpone and reschedule things, and everyone is up in the air about it. So it's affected every facet of my life, and certainly hearing from other people who are struggling to get like work and what have you. So pretty incredible situation right now.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, across really the whole world, and it's definitely hit the United States in the last week, really, and it's accelerated so quickly. Like if you look at the graphs of how the virus has progressed, yeah, and the logarithmic or the exponential curve, it feels like that exponential curve has hit us and things are accelerating in a big way.
Yeah, this is something like, Steve, you've done a lot of, I would say this, you seem to get into the history of things and the how things work and what have you. We've spoken about it numerous times on the show. This, for me, this feels like something I have never experienced before in the history of this country. And I spoke to Roxy about it the other day, and she said even her grandparents are saying that they've never experienced anything like this in terms of the reaction from the citizens across the world, and then the reactions in the stock market, reactions on the job market, what have you. Even now in Beverly Hills, they sent out a text this morning saying that rents are not, evictions are going to stop immediately, that you can, that street parking is okay as long as you're not at a meter, that you won't get ticketed for it. So all these weird changes going on in the world to try to keep people indoors or make sure people are able to stay indoors and not lose their homes.
There's never been anything like it. Certainly there've been diseases that have been incredibly damaging to the world population. But there's never been the combination of a disease spreading with the level of integration and codependency within all of the economy around the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, the last one that was really damaging, of course, was the Spanish flu. And that took place right at the end of World War I. And there, I think the numbers are over 20 million people died in that. Yeah. And certainly we hope that this is nothing like that and that we avoid any kind of damage at that level. And there's some reasons where we're much, much better off. And there's some reasons where we're not. The ways in which we're better off is obviously technology. Our medicine has improved tremendously. Communications have improved tremendously. We didn't have tests for the Spanish flu. We didn't have ways to distribute information right away. We didn't have antibiotics. We didn't have ways to help people with their breathing. All of that is so, so much better. And the other thing, of course, is part of why the Spanish flu spread so terribly was that it was right at the end of World War I, and you had all these soldiers coming home in ships. You had people packed close together. You had infrastructure had been destroyed, and sanitary conditions weren't very good. And so that made that flu spread much more quickly. The disadvantage we have now is populations are much bigger. Our cities are much more dense. We're far more interdependent upon each other. Most of the world was just coming out of an agrarian society at the end of World War I. We're in the middle of an urban factory society. Like so the number of people that are dependent upon a very complex web of an economy to survive is way, way bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's scary. I mean, I when it was initially starting, I was thinking to myself, oh, wow, look at all those countries. That's a shame what's happening to them. You know, and you wanted to believe that it was as slow as they were initially estimating it, right? You want to believe the best possible scenario. But as it's gone along, it has moved so quickly. And the opinions have changed so quickly. And the reaction from the government has changed so quickly. Even the normal Yahoo yokel gaslighting or dog whistling to, you know, you can't close my bar down. You can't do this or that. You can't, all of that. You get the initial like spike and then it gets shut down completely because the seriousness of this is off the chain from anything I've seen before. And I mean like something like Chris, Kid Rock, his co-owner of his bar yesterday said, oh, I'm keeping my bar open. Ain't no governor telling me what I can do. They're just targeting these businesses and it's unconstitutional. 3 hours later, we're shutting the bar down. We don't want to have any problems, coronavirus, blah, blah, blah. So that's an incredible thing that this thing is just sweeping across America and people are taking it way more seriously than they initially were inclined to do.
Well, the big thing that we're frightened of is exponential growth, is that, and part of it is that there are tremendous numbers of unknowns with this disease at this point. And so certainly we hope that we're in the realm of the best case scenarios. For instance, we really don't know how many people have been infected in the world, and we don't know how many people have been infected in the U.S. The U.S. is particularly a problem because we've been so slow to roll out tests. So in South Korea, they're testing 10,000 people a day. They've got drive-through testing set up. In the United States, I don't know what the numbers are right now, but last week we hadn't tested 10,000 people in the entire country.
And so what
that means is there probably are a lot more people that have been infected with this disease than we know. We don't know how we're just starting to get numbers on how infectious it is. That means how many people, when exposed, are actually going to catch the virus. Yeah. And we don't know the mortality rate. The mortality rate estimates are anywhere between 0.5% up to 4%. So by comparison, the flu is 0.1%. So that means if 1,000 people get the flu, one person is likely going to die. If it's 0.5%, well, that means it's five people who are going to die. If it's 4%, well, that means 40 people are going to die.
Yeah.
And if millions of people get this, that's really, really, really bad.
Yeah. And that's what I think has finally shut down all those people who've been saying, oh, it's just like the flu. The flu was worse than this, or it's a political hoax or all this kind of crap. Nah, man, this thing doesn't give a rat's ass what party you vote for, what president you want in charge. This thing will come right through you. And the young people aren't even immune to catching it. They may be immune possibly in higher numbers to fatality from it, but they have
higher resistance.
Yeah, they have higher resistance, but they can pass it on to their uncles, to their older aunts, to their grandparents, to their parents, what have you. So you may be out on that beach whooping it up, but you may catch it. And when you come home, you may not feel any symptoms, but that is inside you. And you may pass it on to a family member who has a lower resistance, a lower immunity, and that person can die from your carelessness, your recklessness. And that's scary to think about.
So, and I would say, even if it's the best case scenario, and which certainly all of us hope that it is, and even if, you know, I would love it. And if the end of all of this, a whole bunch of people say, man, those stupid Democrats overreacted, that would be the best thing to have happen. But even with all that, there's still tremendous, tremendous damage that this is doing to the economy across all spectrums. And in particular, people in the service sector, people with low paying jobs, people living paycheck to paycheck, people in the United States without health insurance. It's going to be real tough on them.
Right. Yeah. And you know what happened today with the president, as we're recording this today, the president coming out and saying, with Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, that we're going to put more money in your hands. We're going to put that is just a Band-Aid on this whole thing, because it isn't just about having the money. It's about the entire structural attack that this thing could cause and damage Americans across all financial spectrums and all classes. And that's the scary thing, you know, and that's why they have to pass these bills to make the testing as free as possible and as immediate and convenient as possible. You talk about South Korea with the drive-through testing. How do we in America not have drive-through? We have drive-through liquor stores. Well, how can we not have a drive-through testing all these things need to come out as quickly as possible. No one needs to be in recess. No one needs to be home. You know, you're an elected official. You need to be 24/7 passing something so that everyone else is who is in the pipeline of making the testing and getting people what they need to get past it, treatment, whatever. All of that, those need to, they need to have their hands untied from political bullshit and they just come straight forward and get it done and over with. And no, and giving a little bit of money to people isn't the answer. The answer is streamlining the process so people get tested, treatment, and healed as quickly as possible so we can get on top of it. China's already showing that their quick response to it has been effective in abating the spread of it at the levels that it could have been had they not acted quicker.
First of all, I think your idea of a combo drive-through liquor store / coronavirus testing makes a lot of sense. Certainly, as we've been getting our supplies, not knowing how long we're going to be in our house,
yeah,
liquor was one of the supplies that we got. One thing that we should point out is that the panic towards stocking your house with toilet paper and that's not necessary at this time. Every indicator is that in the United States, food supplies, there's plenty of food. There's plenty. Think production has been ramped up for some things like disinfectant and paper goods and stuff like that. Yeah. We are not in that place. And if you go ahead and, you know, people that are hoarding stuff are actually taking things away from people that really need them. So we have to be really careful about that. But there are causes for concerns. And I think, you know, one of them is bed space. If you listen to what's happened in Italy and in Spain, where they and they are 2 weeks ahead of us based on the numbers.
Yeah.
One of the big problems is figuring out where do we have beds for people that need to go into the ICU? Do we have enough ventilators? Do we have enough medical supplies? And right now in Italy, they're taxed to the breaking point.
Yeah.
There was just a really powerful interview with an Italian doctor on the Daily podcast, which is the podcast from the New York Times. I highly recommend listening to it. Mm-hmm. It is very upsetting because they're having to make the tough choices of
who lives and who dies.
Yeah. Because if they have an 85-year-old presenting with coronavirus whose lungs are failing and they don't have the medical equipment to take care of that person who has a low chance of survival, they are choosing not to treat.
Yeah.
And those,
this is the civil war again, Steve, that idea of who do you treat? Who do you on the battlefield? Whose injury is more severe that you need to pay more attention to versus other people who is like, it's a lost cause. They're going to die anyway. So you have to make those decisions. And it's a horrible situation for these doctors to be in.
Well, by the way, I'm looking at some of the comments coming in and yes, this is the first time I am appearing publicly as part of the Cinephiles. This is what I look like. This is my face. This is the office where we often record the show. I'm sorry that it's taken such terrible circumstances to, as someone said, bring me out of the shower, out of the shadows, but that's what it is.
Can I say something real quick? Frank Albert, stop sending in those chats that are misguiding people and scaring people. Cut it out. This is not the time for that. I will show Steve how to block you off this chat if you don't stop it right now. All right. I'm sorry, Steve. Go ahead.
There is stuff coming in from him that does not represent any of the information that I've seen anywhere.
Yeah.
And I, you know, if we start distrust, yes, we should be skeptical of some information, but we need to trust particularly the scientists.
Yeah.
You know, anyone might have feelings about the government or feelings about their elected officials. And certainly we're in a time where there's a lot of anger in the world, but that's not the scientists. Okay. The scientists have agreed down the line on this. Their predictions sadly have been all too correct.
Yeah.
And so listening to them and listening to what's necessary is really, really important. Just getting back to the beds. And this is an is a really difficult thing in the US.
Yeah.
In Japan, they have 13 hospital beds per capita per 1,000 people. In Italy, it's around 3.8 hospital beds. The average of developed countries is like 4.8. The US has 2.8. Okay, so we have far fewer hospital beds and far less. In terms of the medical system, we provide excellent medical care. We have problems with insurance. We have problems with distribution of that care, but the care is excellent. But in terms of beds and available equipment, we're not in great shape. So these are things that really, really need to get worked on in this country immediately.
Yeah. And that's what that's why you have to, in my opinion, you have to streamline the situation, because it needs to go, okay, we need beds. All right. Who's in charge of that? How can we get them? Let's get them going. There are people who want to help. There are people who want to volunteer, want to assist, want to get involved in this to get people going. That's important. And you get beds and get people want to volunteer. That's the one thing about the human species. When a situation like this erupts, the first thing they want to do is get involved and help and do what they can do so that people survive this thing as much as possible. They're called to do it. So you have to create the process as easy and as streamlined as possible so that they can help, so they can be there to volunteer and take all the precautions so they themselves don't get infected with this thing while they're helping other people. So all of that, once we recognize what it is we need, it has to be immediately put into place, or we're just going to get caught in all the red tape and the bullshit, and people are going to die. Lives are going to be lost because of it.
Well, and we need to work on the international level in terms of cooperation between countries, yes, on the national level in the United States, on the federal level, state level, the local level, and just in your own communities. And all of us have to work together to solve these problems. So, for instance, while we're staying home and we're trying to do social distancing, we're practicing all the things we've been taught about washing our hands. I've already seen myself touch my face several times in this live stream. That's a tough one for me. We do have to do all those things. We also all live in communities, whether or not you live in a quiet street or an apartment building in the middle of New York City. There are going to be people in your community that are elderly and maybe they need some help getting groceries. There are going to be people with kids and maybe they need some help in some other ways. A lot of people that have their kids staying home, those kids maybe are losing out on hot lunches. That's millions and millions of people in the United States have kids that depend upon those hot lunches. And so figuring out what, like, for instance, on my street, we have a text chain. We've already sent a text that if anyone needs anyone, if anyone's sick, that we're going to help us out. So that's something where you can do that right on your own level. You know, right now in the United States, it looks like the governors and the city, the mayors of cities are really working hard to, in most states, to try to help the situation. And the federal government, as much as anyone who listens to the Cinephiles knows that I'm not a fan of our president, the fact that the federal government has started to move quickly and do the things they're doing should be a sign to all of you that this is extremely serious.
Yeah.
Because President Trump would never be admitting these things. That's not his style. Nope. If it weren't extremely serious.
Yeah, exactly. It's his style to blame the Democrats and create barriers and play the victim in this whole situation. You can see very clearly this is finally something has gotten through to him where he has to actually understand the cost of acting in that manner and how many lives could be lost, will be lost, by him acting in this manner. This isn't the paranoia and fear of the caravan of refugees or immigrants. This is real. This is a real thing. And now we get to see how he's actually going to act, how this administration actually shows up. To me, this reminds me so much of 9/11. How is Bush going to react to this attack on American soil? How is Trump going to react to, and his administration, that's really important, to an actual crisis. Like, this is an actual crisis that maybe no president has ever had to confront. And in that way, we're going to see one way or another if they're equipped to handle it and how many people are going to be involved in making it happen. And if you'll finally listen to the people involved, because the way he started out this whole thing might have probably cost lives because of how slow he was how slow he didn't want to accept what was actually happening, regardless of his scientist, Dr. Anthony Fauci, there saying everything to him that needed to be said. And so if you're going to give any credit to the president, thank God that he finally listened and things are going in motion, and we'll see at the end of the day. But I don't want to see Chinese virus in tweets anymore. I don't want to see the Democrats or a hoax or any of this bullshit. This is about America. And so this has to be the focus. Number one, saving Americans, no matter what their political affiliation is, and no matter what class they belong to, which I think is the most important thing.
I will say something that people will be very shocked to hear me say. I do not believe that President Trump handled this well at all. And it was very obvious from the beginning that he wanted to deny the existence of this virus, to downplay it. And you know, he is not known for being the most honest president. And as you say, the lack of good information coming from the federal government slowed down this process and probably did cost lives. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'll say. This has never happened in this way. And so it's not surprising that governments do not react quickly to it. And in fact, they are reacting quickly right now. So while I will be extremely critical of President Trump in all sorts of things, now is the time to hope that he does well.
Yes.
And if he does, and if this administration doesn't do well, well, then it's time to remove them. Yeah. You know, the other thing I think is I think we spent so far too long in this country worrying about image and popularity and not competency and hard work and the people that actually do jobs. There's so much where if someone looks good, we think they are good. And, you know, because I love the craftsmanship of film, I love, and I know that making a film is really, really hard work. Yeah. And I apply that to everything else. Running a hospital, it applies to running a government, being the officer in a military unit. All of those things take hard work. They take discipline. They take responsibility. They take caring attention to details. Mm-hmm. And there have been far too many situations, and I believe this administration is very guilty of it, where if they look good, we think they are good. Yeah. If people are supporting them, we think they're doing a good job. Right. But in fact, it's actually, what are you doing and how do you do it? Yeah. You know, the fact that they ignored warnings about pandemics, the fact that they disbanded some of the people that have to, you know, deal with pandemics is a huge, huge mistake. And the big one to me is I trust people who are knowledgeable.
Yeah.
And there has been a degradation of the respect for expertise and intelligence in this country. And we are now going to pay the price for that.
Yeah, I agree with you 1,000%, Steve. This idea of being intelligent, branded as the elite, as thinking you're above me. Yes, the intelligent will make an occasional mistake, maybe two or three mistakes, but the less intelligent make 40 mistakes. So I will take an intelligent person making two or three mistakes over a non-intelligent person or a medium intelligent person making 40 mistakes. And that's the problem that I think that has been pushed, the narrative that has been pushed to make people who are in the lower rung of intelligence feel somewhat like they're being the victims of people of superior intelligence. No, we used to aspire to put the most intelligent people in charge of us because even when they made mistakes with all the knowledge and all the information at their fingertips, and we trusted them to make the right decisions. Were they always right? No, but our odds were better with them in charge. Now, as we've denigrated it, and what I think, in my honest opinion, this president is not that intelligent. As you go into that situation, now we see the results of it, the slow moving, the slow believing. And I get what you're saying. Oh, we, you know, no president's ever experienced this. And maybe, you know, the governments are slow to react. I hear you. But if you're watching it happen in China, you're watching it happen in Italy,
agreed,
you're watching it, that should have been the warning call. And then for you to be defensive about it and then start trying to blame Obama or start trying to blame this, which is always this fallback stuff, that to me did us more harm than good. And I think the only reason he's reacting now, and I hope in somewhere, there's somewhere inside of his heart, he actually has empathy for the American people. But if not, it's a politically expedient thing for him to react correctly now and try to do as much as possible to save this country and to save the citizens of this country from death and pestilence and sickness that could affect their daily lives and homelessness, going broke, that kind of stuff. You know, the system is going to hold out for a little bit, but the system might break. If the system financially breaks and they can't keep bailing out, that's when everything is going to be crazy and will be in the darkest timeline. But I will say this, Steve, and a thing that bothers me the most, I'm not trying to be crazy either, is you and I are men of age. We've read numerous books about how governments and how people involved in military intelligence or CIA or FBI or secretive things, how they slowly roll out information, because they know if you roll out the whole thing, people will be consumed or overwhelmed and won't be able to handle it. And I wonder if they're taking us 2 or 3 months at a time, telling us, oh, by July it'll crest, or by June it'll crest and we'll be better, because they actually know it's going to be a year from now before we recover from this. And they're just going to dole out the information every 3 months. Oh, now it'll push till October. It'll push to January. It'll push to. So that's what my worry is here, is this is actually a bigger situation or concern than we actually fully know about at this point.
Well, first of all, we don't know. I mean, that's the basic thing, is we don't know. I think that information is out there. I think from what I've read and the people that I've listened to, anyone who tells you that this is going to be done in June doesn't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Now, it could be, again, if the best case scenario happens, that's fantastic.
Right.
We will all be thrilled. The Spanish flu killed most of its people in July and August. So the idea that, yes, it is true that seasonal flus tend to stop when the weather gets warmer, but we don't know what this coronavirus is going to do.
Right.
Most flus actually have the Spanish flu happened over 2 years. Okay. So there's a strong possibility we're going to be dealing with this for a while. And if the numbers in the United States are much bigger than we think they are, which is likely,
yeah,
then the idea that the kids are going back to school in 2 weeks is ridiculous. That's not going to happen.
Right.
And the big thing that we can say is the economic costs of this, regardless of anything else, are tremendous. And what I would say, so the way I was raised in terms of how the world works is that you hopefully, in the good times, you build up surpluses and you prepare for the bad times.
Right.
And unfortunately, and this is both under Obama and under Trump, but more so under Trump, we've been just going deeper and deeper into debt. And we've not been preparing for the bad times. And so while some of the problems that existed in 2008 were adjusted and improved, most of them weren't.
Yeah.
And so now we might be going into another crisis, and unfortunately, we're not ready. I mean, the good thing is that throughout human history, there have been tremendous, tremendous disasters that are far worse than anything we've seen in our lifetimes. And humans survive. And they usually end up better and stronger. But the cost during those times of the Great Depression, of World War II, of World War I, of the Civil War in the United States are tremendous.
Yeah.
And so hopefully with some competence and some working together, we're going to get through this thing. But it's not going to be easy.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't help when you've got colleges like UCLA that are staying open. They are staying open because they claim that they can't send all these thousands of kids back to their families or back to their homes or whatever. So the staff themselves has to stay on staff while this is happening. I think that's ridiculous. I think that's dangerous as hell. These are all young kids. One gets them, they're all going to get them. Don't tell me they're all, you know how it is when it was young. When you're young, you feel invincible. There's no way they're all, you know, being 6 feet apart. Hell, I was in El Segundo this morning. I went to a coffee shop to get a sandwich for breakfast. 10 people were outside sitting at tables and they were not 6 feet away from each other. So this idea people have that they're invulnerable or they feel like they're safe because they're hanging out with their significant other or a friend, you just never know who has it and how it can be passed on and who is desperate to work and is hiding the symptoms because they need that money to pay rent. So those are those things that you can't factor in or can't really know. And that's the dangerous part of this all. I think everything should be shut down except for maybe delivery systems and what have you, that kind of situation. Of course, the groceries, and those are the most important things. But something like a university, all universities, all schools should be shut down so that the kids are home and being taken care of by their parents. And not being overwhelmed by kids, and not being overwhelmed overall. But, you know, a lot of people are complaining in New York that they're not closing the schools because the medical healthcare professionals would be overwhelmed by the amount of people that would be coming in to try to get tested or try to get treated for this situation. So I personally don't have all the numbers and facts in front of me to give the right answer. But I also think putting people, 30 people in a classroom, how is it not going to spread?
Well, it's such a tough call. And of course, I absolutely agree with you about universities, about schools. Those ones are no-brainers. And in fact, you know, for my university, we had a training session over the weekend on how to do classes virtually, and I know that's happening all over the country, and that's fantastic. There are other places where we're talking about medical professionals or the food supply or keeping our internet going so we can have this podcast, where people are going to have to be in a room with each other. Yeah. And again, this is where the concept of triage and of, you know, okay, this is the new situation. What is the best way to operate within it? And it is going to take a lot of thought. It's not something that's, it wouldn't have been possible to have a plan for this in 24 hours or a week. It's going to take some time. I think the top priority is to help with our most vulnerable citizens. Yeah. So that's people that are homeless, that have low income jobs, that lack medical care, because nobody should have to face the choice of, I might have this virus, but I am afraid to go into the hospital because I don't have medical care. Exactly. That's going to spread the disease. Right. Is that so? That's really super important. There's also, you know, a ton of small businesses, particularly restaurants and bars, they're getting killed, you know? And so what's going to happen to all of these people over the next year where the economy is going to go down? Yeah. I mean, that, you know, if they're closed and only doing takeout, they're in deep, deep trouble.
Yeah, it's a very good point, Steve. And that's where you go like, well, look, I love that the president is bailing out these airlines. He needs to be bailing out small businesses and medium businesses that rely on customer traffic in large numbers to survive. So to me, it's great that you're bailing out the airlines, but no one's flying anywhere right now. What people are doing is wanting to eat in healthy places or places that they know are clean. So why not go and create a program to help those businesses stay afloat, stay stocked with food so that people can survive? I get that this is a capitalist economy. Totally get it. Supply and demand, get it all. But this is about survival, and this matters more than just some principle. And this is really important. So do what you need to do so that those businesses don't feel scared that they're going to lose their houses or they're going to lose their restaurants or their eateries or what have you, and make sure they're taken care of. And then we'll deal with the airlines down the road. Keep them all employed, of course, and pay them out because they're not willingly leaving the job. You're forcing them off the job. There has to be situations like this. And those executives making millions of dollars and paying themselves millions of bonuses, strip all those bonuses out and put that towards the employees. That's how you get it done, for God's sakes. I'm so frustrated by this idea of wanting to separate classes when a situation like this comes up. You got to do what you got to do. You got to make sacrifices yourself to make sure everyone lives, because without them, you don't have a job, nor do you have any kind of money as a salary. So it's important overall.
Well, in managing an economy, a government has a bunch of levers that they can pull. So, and generally, particularly in the last 50 years, they've pulled the levers that deal with the big corporations. Right. The biggest one being the interest rate. Let's make money cheaper. Therefore, there'll be more investment. Corporations will be more liquid. They'll be able to hire more people. That's the theory. Yeah. And with the levers we haven't pulled so much are the levers of let's give money to the other end. Instead of supply side, we go to the demand side and help out the people that are poorest.
Right.
And that's what we haven't done so much. One of the problems with what's happening economically is that most of the economic turndowns have been demand side turndowns. So a whole bunch of people can't afford to buy houses. You have a housing crisis, and that's 2008. You have this huge explosion in the tech companies in the dot-com boom, and they don't live up to where they're supposed to deliver on. That's another demand side crisis, and their value crashes. That's 2001. Yeah. In this case, it started with a supply side crisis because all of our interwoven manufacturing starting in China wasn't producing. And so suddenly the iPhone doesn't have the part they need, or this clothing manufacturer doesn't have clothes to manufacture to go sell at Walmart. And so suddenly we have a supply side crash. And then putting money into the economy by lowering interest rates and handing out a, you know, quantitative easing, which they've done. Yeah. Well, that doesn't help when you don't have the part. The part doesn't exist. The factory is closed. So there isn't a way to use that money in the same way that we have in the past. And then what's about to happen, or is what's starting to happen, is a demand side crisis, because you're going to have all these people out of work. Yep. And so consumer goods aren't going to sell. That represents, I think, 30 or 40% of the economy. I mean, there's so much stuff that's going to be in trouble. And that's really, really worrying.
I agree. And that's where you go, well, who's in charge of that kind of situation? Who's in charge of making sure that doesn't get to a critical level or a beyond critical level? Because I just, I have a horrible feeling that if the right people aren't in the right positions, this thing will break us as a country. And that really scares me because you can already see, Stephen, I went to five different markets this morning at 8 a.m. driving around trying to find the market or the store that didn't have a line. And I went to a Ralph's, 100 people were in line upstairs and downstairs, and they were letting people in 25 at a time from both sides. That's how bad it was at 8 a.m. I went to the Smart and Final, 30 people in line. Went to another Smart and Final, 25 people in line. Finally found a Target way down there on Jefferson Boulevard that I could go in, and they were rationing out toilet paper by the fitting rooms. They had set up an area there where the toilet paper was stacked up. You saw samples of what you could get. You were allowed one. So you could ask for one, you got the one, and you were gone. That's how it worked. Paper towels, you can get whatever you want, but only one of it. But it was all set out. But they were rationing out the toilet paper one at a time.
And I don't imagine what's the toilet paper thing.
I think people just got to go to the bathroom, my man.
Well, how much toilet paper do you use in a month?
I know it's a matter of security. Like, I think.
I mean, do I need a year's supply of toilet paper? I mean,
I wouldn't say no.
Fair. But,
you know, those are those things that I think people look at toilet paper, like that's the first thing you see in movies and stuff, right? They're rationing toilet paper, water, and meat. That's always the big things that they're rationing, also beds. But you see that. So people have an instinctual feeling to run to it. Who's in charge of that? Thank God that the stores finally got a hold of the runs that people were doing on them and like taking so much out of their stores, because they realized how serious it was. And thank God that there are enough American citizens who understand I'm okay to wait in line for this because I understand that other people need it too. And I've seen some fights online. You've seen at Costco and whatever, but it hasn't been the predominant reaction, which I find to be hopeful for us getting through this crisis. Hopeful sign.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say it again. I said at the beginning of this stream, don't panic about the supplies. We're not in that place yet.
Yeah,
There's plenty of food in the United States. There's plenty of materials. Yes, they weren't ready for the run that's happened in the last week, but that is not a major concern. And by rushing to the store and getting 70 pounds of meat to throw in your freezer or something, you're taking it away from people that really need it.
Yeah, older people that really need it. Yeah.
Look, I think we've kind of set our piece on this. This has been our first live video stream. People like them. Maybe we'll do some more. But here's one more thing I want to say. The Cinephiles is about watching movies and talking about them. And we are going to keep right on doing that. John and I are going to be recording remotely rather than in the same room together. But other than that, we're going to keep watching movies. We're going to keep talking about them. And if you're stuck at your home and you know, you got some movies to watch. Yeah. We got good films coming up. I was literally editing our next podcast right before we got online. And John and I are recording one later in the week. And we're going to keep them coming. So we really appreciate all of you paying attention and letting us talk a little bit off the topic. Yeah. But we're going to get back to talking movies real soon.
Yeah, thank you all for watching and for later listening and watching this Cinephiles medium instead of a short. I think it's a medium, whatever you want to call this, because this is the longest one we've ever done. I think it's important for us to talk about it. And I don't know about you, Steve, but I certainly feel a little bit better having had the conversation with you about this.
Absolutely. Understand
a little bit more about the situation. Sometimes that's all you need. And for those of you who are watching and listening, hopefully you've got someone you can talk to as well to kind of like ease your concerns or ease your fears or just vent out about it a little bit so that you can come back to normal. So that's what I wish for all of you. But yes, keep downloading our episodes. We're going to keep making these things as long as we have the internet, as long as we can communicate, we're going to keep making these things. And that's my goal too on the YouTube channel and on the other podcasts that I do. Generate that content because people need to be entertained when they're home and take their minds off things. And I'm glad that we have a show that can do that for them, Steve.
Hey, I got a question for you. Normally at midnight tonight, we put out our preview. Do you think we should announce our film this week a little bit early?
I think that's a good idea.
I might say, I am Spartacus.
I might say, I'm Spartacus.
I'm Spartacus. That's Spartacus coming in a couple of days on the Cinephiles. Thank you all for tuning in, and everyone stay safe. Take care of yourself.
Wash your hands.